Hi, this is Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver-Stamnis, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. This week, our program continues our look at how feminist theory and practice for people over 50 has changed over the past few decades.
Our guest today is Dr. Mary Brecker Jenkins, who is on the phone with us from Tennessee. She is retired from the School of Social Work at Temple University. Mary's practice, research, and publications have been dedicated to feminist practice, poor people's movements, and economic human rights. Welcome to the program, Mary.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you contacted me.
Me too. What has been the impact of the 1970s feminist movement on women living in poverty and the economy at large?
Oh, goodness. When I think of what we were dreaming of in the 1970s, it certainly did not include the cruel joke that we played on women living in poverty, and men too, as a matter of fact. I think we were terribly naive about the ways in which the powers that be could use our energy and our longing to be free of some of the old shackles to appropriate our labor, and in such a way that we've driven more women into poverty, and those who are already in poverty, or that section of the class that was already in poverty, is now often homeless and childless. Let's think back to the 70s for a moment. You know, one of the things that many of the people who became involved in the women's movement, which we at that time called the Women's Liberation Movement, significantly enough, what we were hoping to do was to get out of the Brady Bunch image of womanhood and step out into the world to express ourselves largely through work, through jobs. Certainly been a very long time since we abandoned the fight to have women's work in the home recognized as remunerative work. But leaving aside that important parenthesis, we did go into the workforce in large numbers, a workforce that significantly was changing very fundamentally from a production economy to a service economy. And without being aware of that fundamental change that was happening, as it turns out, exactly at the same time, we marched into the labor force where we, of course, continue to be exploited with unequal wages and so on and so forth, to the point that it became expected that we would work outside the home. One of the, I think, direct consequences of that was that it fed the myth that women who were receiving any form of welfare payment were just too lazy and resting in their privilege to want to stay home and actually to care for their children. So there we were, moving into the labor force in great numbers, a changing labor force, and largely led by women who could loosely be called middle class. We mustn't forget that poor women, and particularly poor women of color, were always there. They had to be for survival. So now we're in a situation in which we've completely eroded the need and right of women and men to choose to care for their children and have that valued as something that should be remunerated in society. The expectation is that if we don't aspire to go into a workforce, one that for very few people pays enough to live with any kind of dignity and comfort, unless there's another person in the home who is also a wage earner, we've really, in many ways, driven an even deeper wedge between women who have some measure of economic privilege and those who don't. That certainly was unintended. And I'm not saying that there weren't people living in poverty that weren't in the movement. They were, but not in great enough numbers, nor did those of us who were yearning to get out of the home listen carefully enough to their lived reality, their lived experience of being forced into work. So now those who were supported to raise their children in the home are no longer supported to do that, no longer valued to do that. And again, the irony is that now that we got what we wished for, be careful what you wish for, now that we got what we wished for, women and men are having to very often put our children in profit-making, underscore, daycare centers making profit on the exploitation of the child care workers, who often are not paid much more than minimum wage.
One of the questions we also had is there was a march in January. We wondered if you could describe your experience with that march and or in conversation with people who went. And how are they referencing feminism?
Well, as is the case with most things in life, particularly around our struggles for a better life for all, I had very mixed feelings about it. I was very excited, of course, that so many people who had never been involved in any kind of demonstration stepped out and stepped in and stepped up. But we desperately need people to be in a movement for the long haul. Demonstrations are inspiring and they're exciting, but I long to have opportunities to have deeper conversations with those people who were stepping up for the first time, as well as those who have been around for a long time, and we're very thrilled to see so many people come out. We can't just be about being angry, you know. We have to be about creating or reclaiming a vision or set of visions that we had very early on in the feminist movement, the women's liberation movement. And those were visions of a world that looked very markedly different than what we have now. You know, when we started in the 70s, in the 60s, and before, because we must remember that there were other waves of feminist movements, there was a very revolutionary spirit and analysis at that time. Most of the people that are stepping out now are relying on a reformist agenda, not a revolutionary agenda. And ironically, I think that because of the changes in the economic base worldwide, and particularly here in the United States, there is no better time than this moment to be thinking along revolutionary paths. In many ways, I think this is a better moment today to be envisioning an entirely different world.
It's a clarion call, if I ever heard one. Mary, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, it was my pleasure.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the links to our podcasts, email, and Facebook group, go to chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks for listening.
We'll be here next week and hope you will be too.